Hello, everybody. It's July 8th. We're back at you with episode 52 of the ClapperCast. I'm Burke.
And I'm Sean.
And we're rounding out our division MVPs here this week. And we are moving on to, last but not least, the Pacific Division, where we
Actually,
live.
you know what? I think for the NHL and the Pacific Division, it's last and definitely least.
Shots fired.
Take that, Pacific.
So we'll stick with our theme of alphabetical order. We'll move first to the Anaheim Ducks. And I'm very curious as to who you've picked.
I ended up settling on Cam Fowler because, I mean, his name is a play on the whole Ducks organization's name. That was basically kind of my whole shtick on him. But he ultimately ended up being probably one of their best and most reliable players through the year. Like, the offense was disappointing. Leading scorer had like 43 points. The rookies weren't exactly impactful, or they ended up being injured. And even John Gibson, who's like usually like one of the better goalies in the league, had a poor season, though that's no help from the skaters in front of him. But Fowler himself had a somewhat positive impact on the team in front. And probably, he's kind of a long-tenured, well-known player on that team, so he'll be important for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good meme name is a worthy metric to use for MVP. I chose John Gibson just because he didn't quit hockey after this season.
He did not Patrick Waugh them.
No, he managed to have an above 900 save percentage, which I thought was impressive on the Ducks, considering the Ducks sucked ass. And even though he had a negative goal saved above average, I thought, his stats weren't too bad. So he had a 904 save percentage and 3.0 goals against average. It's definitely not a good year for him, but like you said, the leading scorers didn't really, then no one really stood out. Everyone was pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the players in front of him, they weren't often able to prevent the type of high quality chances that would help boost Gibson's stats either. So him
Yeah.
managing to maintain 3 goals against per game is, while it's not a great number, the offense itself was not exactly impressive enough to even give him any support defensively or offensively.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team where the highest plus minus on the whole team is plus five. So, it's not a whole lot of defense going on out there.
No.
So, to be able to just, he played 51 games. I don't know. I think they relied on him a lot. Ryan Miller played a few games, but not really. Gibson hung in there. Didn't shit on his teammates. Didn't quit the bet or quit the fucking team. So I'll give it to him, I guess. But it was a. It's kind of like choosing the best of the worst, really.
Exactly.
So I think we can really just move right ahead to another team that's probably very similar. The Arizona Coyotes. I've got the entire forward core for scoring about 10 goals all season. They're my MVP.
10? Good job them.
Yeah, they really helped out the team,
Pekka
to
Rinne
be
almost
honest.
outscored the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah. I mean, they had one 20 goal scorer, Connor Garland. I honestly think nobody deserves it on this team except for the goalie tandem. So that's who I'm going with.
Yeah, and I'll jump right in. I settled on Darcy Kemper because he's quite honestly, if he played more games, he would be a legitimate Vezina candidate. He should have been last year, but he didn't really get as much consideration. And once again, this year, he's one of the best goalies in the league. Like you said, I mean, the skaters relatively low scoring. They're kind of a boring, gritty, physical team, and no one is really able to stand out, even with them having guys like Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel on the team now. So Darcy Kemper is, at this point, one of the most under-recognized, underrated goalies in the league. Ends up with a 928 save percentage, 222 goals against average, and most importantly to me is that 16.65 goals saved above average. That puts him That's like insane. Fourth in the league, or fourth or fifth in the league or something, which indicates like, okay, so the team didn't score, but they still did well enough. They still won games. They still did well enough because Kemper and Ranta and Aiden Hill as well were able to save enough goals to still give the team a positive goals for goals against ratio.
Yeah. Yeah, Darcy Kemper had a really good year for, you know, the games that he did play. It was injury problems again, but, you know, that 928 save percentage is insane. So definitely MVP worthy for a team that had not a whole lot else going on.
No. No, it'll be interesting to see how they do in the playoffs, because their style might serve them well to kind of have a little bit of a run, because they already have that kind of gritty team first mentality, but they still need to find, like, you can't just rely on winning every game 1-0.
You can't. You can't win in this league just scoring one goal a game.
Surprisingly, no. You'd think it would work, but I don't think you're going to find too much luck with that.
Tortorella's in shambles.
John Tortorella, every player is a goalie.
All right.
That's
well,
why they
weren't
worried about losing Bobrovsky.
Yeah. Move on here to the Calgary Flames. So who did you have for the Calgary Flames?
I think we have to talk about the contributions of one Milan Lucic, where he comes in, he's kind of a veteran player, a veteran leader, and, you know, they really look to him to help propel this team forward this year. And, you know, what a trade there, Milan Lucic for James Neal.
Matches his fucking point total in 11 less games.
What a season. What a season right there. How many people do you think just rage quit the episode right there?
Oh yeah, just the Milan Lucic segment, the weekly Milan Lucic segment. Really just got to them. Yeah, I mean, to be honest though, that trade, I don't know what people's expectations were for that, but honestly, I don't think it was James Neal scoring as many goals as he did. And I think people might have thought Lucic would suck a bit more than he did. He wasn't as bad, I don't think.
I think he did better than expected, just because he was able to play in a role that was more suited to him right now. Like, he came in to be a third or fourth liner, not top line. So he ended up, he only played 13 minutes a game, but that was kind of where he was brought into play, and it just suited him better.
Yeah, but, kind of like that role player.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But on a more serious note, I did end up, and this pains me as an Oilers fan to have to say this name as an MVP, but Matthew Tkachuk. Yeah, exactly. it's Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, he cemented his place as the heart and soul of that team on the ice. They follow him. Like, he's the energy of that team. Dare I say future captain, possibly?
Yeah, I mean, he's already an A, right? So there's people that were joking about that when it happened, but I mean, hey, kind of nailed it there. He plays hard every night. He's got a lot of most points on the team. Probably the most penalty minutes on the team. Penalty minutes. He's got, you know, a few game winners. He's got that sick overtime winner that he had this year, where he did that between the legs, like at speed almost. He hits everything that moves. He is like the Tkachuk brothers are definitely like their own brand. They're
a unique type of player, where they manage to be like that gritty, kind of pesty type player. Like, Matthew Tkachuk knows how to push players' buttons. He's got enemies and rivalries throughout the league. He knows how to get under the player's skin, and he knows how to just swing momentum right back in Calgary's favor. And that's a really valuable trait to have.
I think he should be their MVP just for the sound bites that he gets out of Drew Doughty.
That too. That's actually very valuable.
those are great. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty unique to have. it's pretty unique to have a such a talented player also be like that shit disturber.
Exactly.
I feel like Brad Marchand has really developed into that role, become one of the premier players in the league. As much as, a lot of people hate saying that, you have to respect the game. He's good at what he does, and he puts up the points, and you have to respect it. And I think Tkachuk is really blossoming into that same sort of high point totals. Not quite as high as Brad Marchand, 100 plus points, but a full season next year could be there.
I mean, he hit 77 last year. He was on pace for about probably low 70s again this season. So he'd be out of too much of a stretch to throw him up into like point per game or mid to high 80s.
Yeah.
Calgary struggled a bit this season, and a lot of the offense dried up compared to last year. So lost a few points there, I imagine.
Yeah. He was my pick. I had a special mention for Elias Lindholm for 7-game winners.
Yeah.
Still doesn't beat the David Perron 9, but that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Lindholm too looks like he's a time on ice leader for forwards.
Yeah.
He plays a lot of important minutes, so that's a good call as well.
Yeah. I guess, before Bill Peters left, he would have been one of those trusted guys that he had from Carolina. So lots of minutes, getting lots of opportunities out there. His shooting percentage too was insane, 17.2. That is
very high. That is.
Outside of Milan Lucic, I think Matthew Tkachuk is definitely, the MVP on the team, but
We do have to give a special shout out to the team for making the playoffs with Toby Reeder only scoring 4 goals.
Wow. Yeah, so I mean, if he scored 10,
they would have won the division.
it's still a bizarro world where the Calgary Flames and Oilers have swapped players as much as they have recently.
It was really weird last summer how Calgary's like, what do we need to push this team over the top? And they go and get a handful of Oilers.
Former Oilers.
Like,
let's get
that's
Cam
kind of an
Talbot.
Odd one. Cam Talbot, Brandon Davidson, Toby Reeder, Milan Lucic. All in one summer.
After you've traded for Lucic. It's very bizarre. Although, all that being said, I am extremely hyped for the Calgary-Winnipeg series.
Yes.
As we mentioned in our series previews, I am super excited for a Battle of the Prairies. Even if it's not the Battle of Alberta, it's going to be exciting to watch.
It's close enough, It's close enough.
Yeah. Get that Manitoba-Alberta crossfire with Saskatchewan caught in the middle. Not knowing what to do with itself.
They're just going to stand in the middle looking up like, yeah, we're here too.
Yeah. Go Rough Riders.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we mentioned the Oilers go into the Flames. Maybe let's talk about the Oilers now. So as the resident Oilers fan, who is your choice and why is it Leon Draisaitl?
Peter Chiarelli. You want to know why? Because he signed Draisaitl that contract. And here's why Leon Draisaitl is the team's MVP. He absolutely took control of that team, as McDavid had, and as I'm doing air quotes here, off year, recovering from an injury and sickness and the other injury at the end of the season. And he very boldly showed that he can, in fact, lead his own line. And that was one of the big questions still surrounding him coming into the season, is whether or not Draisaitl could actually anchor his own line, or whether he had to be McDavid's wingman the whole time. But nope, Draisaitl can take his own line. This season he ends up with 110 points, 10 game winning goals, 22-37 time on ice per game. That's insane for a forward. Surprisingly enough, he had a 52.1% face-off winning percentage, which surprised me. Actually, I didn't think he'd be that high yet on there. He had a 19.7 shooting percentage as well. And that's actually a regression from last year when he had like over 20%. So he ends up being the Art Ross winner. He's a likely Hart winner, probably. I haven't heard too much to the contrary or too much that Panarin or McKinnon are going to win it. Obviously, in that case, too, he's going to be a leading candidate for the Ted Lindsay Award as well. The knock against him is that he often, especially in December when he had a shitty month, in his own words, that he had a very poor impact offensively. He had negative possession numbers. And it's kind of like a Patrick Kane scenario where the offense makes up for the lack of defense. But you can... You can't deny the fact that his 110 points kind of carried the team, especially early on in the season when they started off so well, and Draisaitl was just lighting the lamp day in, day out.
Yeah, he definitely had some criticism earlier in the year based on the defensive play. I remember he was like minus, I don't know, something double digits at some point. And
well, he ended minus points. 7.
110 points, though, to be fair, is pretty remarkable. So, I mean, like, you're not putting him out there to play defense, right? Like, that's not what he's out there for. So, I think, you know, Draisaitl's definitely the MVP. He's my choice as well. I think, you know, if McDavid played the same amount of games, it would have been interesting to see if he had the same number of points or if he was gonna end up with more or less. I had a honorable mention to Nuge and Kyler Yamamoto.
Because that line took off when they got put together.
Yeah, like it's just like you were talking about how Draisaitl's just a byproduct of McDavid. He can't have his own line. It's like, no, he can. And it can be extremely successful with a rookie on it, too. Like,
oh, yeah. The feisty little Kyler Yamamoto, like, killing it out there. He had 26 points in 27 games playing mostly with Draisaitl.
Yeah, I picked him up in my fantasy pool. I had Draisaitl. I picked him up, like, in the late second or in the late first or early second. And I picked up Yamamoto later on in the year when he got called up, and it was amazing. It was like every goal I'd get like double damage because Yamamoto and Draisaitl would be in on it, and I loved it. Yamamoto, like, you know, small-ish sample size, but from what we saw, it was tremendous. I think he's going to be extremely deadly moving forward. He's a smaller guy, but he's not afraid to play in front of the net. I mean, that's how he got a lot of his points. I remember
joking about this when when this line came together, that apparently Kyler Yamamoto was the net front presence the Oilers needed the whole time.
Yeah,
just like
you,
5'10" energy players all I needed.
We need the smaller forward to get in there and you know, get into the dirty areas. Someone
you know
brave
works,
like Kyler Yamamoto, not Milan Lucic.
It works. But, like, Draisaitl's so good at passing that he can still go find a way to get Yamamoto the puck right in close and get a goal. Like, it's easy for them.
I think he's going to be exciting in playoffs, and I think that, you know, having McDavid and Draisaitl split up in playoffs is going to be so important, because in playoffs you're playing against obviously the best teams out there. They're studying tape before the series even starts to see, you know, what are the tendencies of certain players like McDavid or Draisaitl, and they develop strategies to shut them down. And having McDavid and Draisaitl on separate lines allows them to have to make tough decisions on do we spread out our shutdown? Do we shut down one of them? And having a guy like Kyler Yamamoto out there who can finish is going to be great.
Yeah, because we see... You know, McDavid can do whatever with anybody on his line. It doesn't exactly matter. But having that potent, and we'll call them the second line just because they're behind McDavid probably, but having that potent of a second line makes it so much more difficult to match up against them. And we saw that's how Draisaitl kind of really took off against Anaheim in the 2017 playoffs, that the tougher defensive matchup went to like Kessler, and that left Draisaitl with an easier matchup to play against, and it let and he took advantage of that, where McDavid mm-hmm. got shut down a little bit, Draisaitl took off, and now teams are going to have to try and figure out, okay, do we cover McDavid or Draisaitl, like you said.
That is a tough call to make. That's like Crosby or Malkin.
Exactly. Right?
That's not a good dilemma to be in. And I don't know. I'm interested to see what Chicago does. Because they've got, you know, Taves. Taves' line can usually act as that shutdown two-way line. But
let's just throw Draisaitl and Kane out there at the same time and just have all offense, no defense.
Yeah. It'll be like the 2009, like, Washington Capitals just balls out.
Everyone's
offense.
In the offensive zone 60 minutes a game.
Yeah. Mike Green living at the far blue line. Just that's it. But yeah, I mean, it's if you want to get a little bit deeper about it, like the MVP of the Oilers this year should be the emergence of their second line, right? Like they've always had that top end talent, but it's been just on one line, but this year they've really
shallower
been
than
able
a kiddie
to
pool, basically.
Yeah, they've really been able to get some depth on at least those two top lines, spread the scoring talent around a bit. It's really elevated their game, I think.
Yeah, and even this year, the third and fourth lines, they weren't exactly the offensive catalysts at all, but they were still able to be better defensively. And
yeah, which is great when you have those that high end scoring talent on the top two lines. You don't necessarily need as much scoring in those bottom guys.
Yeah, instead of having to score five goals to win every game, you maybe need three or four. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have one other guy, special mention, which is Ethan Bear. I was extremely impressed with that guy.
He's going to be so good. If this season is any indication, wow.
Yeah. He was very impressive.
I can't believe, like, he's a smaller defenseman. Like, he's not overly intimidating physically in height or whatever, but he's so good positionally and he's so good at blocking lanes that he's just insanely good at defending anybody. He doesn't matter if he's got like a 4, 5, 6 inch height deficit on the opponent. Like he knows where to stand to get in the way and block the lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He looked very solid back there, and it's not often you can say that about, you know, a defender coming into the league, playing their first full season. I'm used to watching a little bit smaller defensemen on the Capitals, like someone like Christian Juice, and no knock on Juice, but he's always been that smaller defenseman, and you can see it. It's easier for guys to get around them, so they have to be better positionally. And Bear's just excelling at that. Like, he's so good positionally. He's making it hard for guys to get around him, even though he may be smaller than them.
Yeah, and he really knows how to close off plays and close off guys driving in along the boards and just stop anything from happening. That it stifles so many offensive chances. And one other thing that impresses the hell out of me about him is how good his hand-eye coordination is and how good he is at, like, picking up pucks coming at him and, like, knocking down pucks to the blue line, keeping the offense going. It's really fun to watch him like keep a power play alive.
Yeah, and it's great that the Oilers have like another 20-point, 30-point. If it was like a full season, maybe D-man. You know, they've got Klefbom, but Klefbom and Nurse, I guess. But aside from that, you know, there wasn't really anybody jumping in offensively much. So it's nice to have another option there for, you know, maybe a guy for power play two, or, you know, just to wheel the puck a little bit. So it's nice to have Ethan Bear jump in. Mm-hmm. And with the defensive prospects that the Oilers have, like, they could be super stacked on defense.
I've been looking at this for a couple of seasons and seeing, like, if even half of these players develop into regular NHLers, they're going to be absolutely stacked. defensively.
Yeah.
That's going to be their surplus where they can kind of go and pick away and fill roster holes with excessive defensemen.
Which is going to be insane when you have Draisaitl and McDavid hit their prime and got some quality D-men in the pipeline. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, very exciting. Did you have any other sleeper picks as the Oilers fan of the pod?
Well, I do want to throw a special mention out to Oscar Klefbom for kind of solidly emerging as like that legitimate top two defenseman that they've needed. He ends up playing 25-25 per game, like plays in every situation, anchors that first power play unit, 34 points. It's kind of possession advanced stats numbers aren't the greatest, but I don't think the team as a whole really did great, so I'm not gonna focus on one player in particular like that. But he finally had a mostly healthy season. Played 62 games, only missed 9, I think, that season. But he really emerged as the best defenseman on the team this year.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, I guess we'll move on here to the LA Kings. This is another team that was kind of hard to choose. Strictly going on points, I would have to say Anze Kopitar, 62 points in 70 games. He was a +6, which is impressive for a team that finished as low as the LA Kings did. 21 goals, 41 assists. That's a pretty nice split. Yeah, I mean, there's not much else to say. He had a 55% faceoff percentage, win percentage. My meme pick
winnage
says,
is good too.
Yeah. My meme pick is Matt Roy, because he was a defenseman and he finished at +16.
Wow, good job to him. The team was -32 goal differential and you finished +16. That's actually impressive.
Yeah, the team total is -127 and he was +16. So good job, Matt Roy. You managed to change or, you know, get off the ice when the team was scoring.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to score. So... better hop off now.
Yeah. So he was playing like the NHL Be a Pro method of avoiding minuses. Just get off the ice. So good job, Matt Roy. Who did you have?
Yeah. I mean, even though the offense was a bigger black hole than the gap in Drew Doughty's teeth, I had to go with Kopitar as well. He's, like you said, leading point scorer, 55 percentage, faceoff winning percentage. He somehow still had a positive impact on the team, on the play. He ends up playing most of his minutes against the best in the Pacific, the best in the West, and names that include Draisaitl, Gaudreau, Couture, McKinnon, and still ends up being +6, leads the forwards in time on ice per game. It's got to be him. He kind of had a bounce back year after a poor year last year, and unfortunately the rest of the team did not follow that this year.
Yeah. That's true. I think another MVP would be Tyler Toffoli for earning them, was it Tyler Madden from the Vancouver Canucks in that trade?
Yeah. Yeah, got him a little bit of stuff in return.
Yeah, so good job, Tyler, earning your former team a nice haul. They got Tim Schaller, which is great. 20-year-old
fourth
prospect
line grinder Ilya Kovalchuk.
Ooh, yeah.
He does a lot from the fourth line in his 17 games there.
Yeah, definitely. So Toffoli, the trade was Tim Schaller, Tyler Madden, who's a great prospect from the NCAA, a second round pick this year, and a conditional fourth round in 2022. So, you know, they traded Toffoli for like 8 games or something and got all that. So
yeah,
good job, Tyler Toffoli. Yeah, I mean, a really exciting team, LA. I don't really know who else.
I mean, they're kind of mid rebuild right now, right? Even a lot of their best players are kind of hitting their aging years and going downhill a little bit, and their prospects aren't quite ready to make an impact in the NHL yet. So it's just going to be a couple of weird years for that team.
Martin Furk, he had, the hardest shot in the NHL?
I believe so.
Way to go.
We see he gave up all the zeros to make 100. He gave up all the vowels in his name to make 100 on the hardest shot score clock.
Yeah, that's what happens when you don't have any vowels in your last name. Shoot real hard. All right, well, LA, it's been real. Let's move on, perhaps, to San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
another
it was
a team here.
they were a team. They did team things this season, like disappointing year all around, poor performance by nearly everybody. Injuries to key players, like they're missing Couture, Hurdle, Carlson, like major names for significant time. They were another team that just didn't have much of a standout player. Personally, I settled on Evander Kane as their MVP this season. I think, you know, he's their second leading scorer, led the team in goals with 26 as well as 6 game winning goals. He seems to be kind of an emotional energy force, driving force on that team. And he kind of carries the momentum for them. He knows how to swing the momentum in their favor. He also does play in all situations, and he ends up being one of their more relied on defensive forwards, especially now that Barclay Goodrow has been traded. And even though he does take a lot of poorly timed penalties and kind of put his team at a disadvantage quite frequently, you kind of have to weigh the good with the bad and realize his overall contribution to that team on the ice is pretty positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, Ottawa was happy with how San Jose did this year, but not a lot of San Jose fans would agree. The real pick that I have here is Kevin LeBanc.
MVP. What a good guy, taking a significant contract hit this year, right?
Yeah, and it really didn't pay off for him, so I'm sad about that. But he had 33 points and managed to be minus 33. So I thought that was pretty impressive.
Is that a stat counter's error? Do they realize they're supposed to give him a plus one for every goal that he's on the ice for?
I don't know. I think his line was just that bad.
What line? He was the only one that bad?
He either led or was the worst on his team, depending on how you want to look at plus minus. So he had the lowest total.
It's summer. We're
team.
Talking about golf here. He's winning.
Yeah. So he won the green jacket on the team. Yeah. And also in the league, he had the lowest plus minus of a player that did not play on Detroit this year.
I like how we have to add that caveat that did not play on Detroit.
Yeah. So the top 10 is full of all Detroit players, Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko, kind of funnily enough. And then Kevin LeBanc is in there too at 5. So he's the 5th worst in the league at plus minus. So
yeah,
he's right
just,
in there
that's
with
just
all
a hard
Detroit
year.
Players. So that's rough.
Kevin LeBanc,
I'm
Detroit
interested
confirmed.
To see what happens to this guy. Because he is a good player. And
he is. He had a great season the year before. And then we were all kind of surprised he took that massive cut on his... Or that massive pay cut this season is kind of one of those like, I'll get you now, you get me later. But then it didn't pay off that well. But I also don't know how much of that you can put on him versus the team was absolute garbage with him. Like, he didn't exactly have a chance to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm interested to see if he'll stick around, because he tried to do the team a solid and then the team sucked, and I honestly don't know where they're going to be next year. So does he stick around or does he leave? I don't know, but he's my MVP because he was a minus 33. And that's it for San Jose. I don't have a real one. They were that bad. I don't think they deserve a real
MVP. Honestly, this was the hardest one for me as well. I was stuck between like Timo Meier just for being the leading scorer, but then you have like Kucher and Hurdle who are just really good offensively, but they missed major time throughout the season, and it took a bit to settle on Kane.
Even
their all-star top of the league defensemen were unimpressive or missed significant time again.
It is interesting
for San Jose. They managed to have like the best penalty kill in the league, like 85% or something crazy.
So they just sucked at even strength?
Yeah, apparently you're just they just need to play shorthanded the whole game and they might actually do okay. give up less goals per game, probably.
It's a good strategy. All right, well, we'll move on here to the Vancouver Canucks. So, who did you have?
I decided on JT Miller for this season. I think he came in with a bit weird expectations on him with that trade. There was a lot of talk around the trade that brought him to Vancouver about how it's kind of overpayment, like that seems like a lot for that guy. But he came in and proved all of us wrong who said that. And yeah. I mean, he shows up, scores 72 points in 69 games, leads the team in scoring, tied for the goal scoring lead with Elias Pettersson at 27, and his contributions, he's also the time on ice leader for forwards per game as well, but his contributions go beyond just direct on the ice like that, and also into how he's sort of come in from an experienced winning Tampa Bay team to act as sort of a leader for a lot of these younger players in Vancouver as they start to try and turn their things around with Pettersson, Horvat, Hughes, Besser, Vertanen, Gaudette. All these young players who need an experienced presence to kind of guide them into how to win in the NHL. He comes here from Tampa Bay, who's been really good at that, maybe not the cup, but good in general for all of those years. And his guidance for the team is going to be really important over the next couple of seasons here as they start to turn things around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to note about JT Miller. His faceoff percentage, 59.2.
Yes.
I believe Elias Pettersson is listed as a center, but he doesn't actually take that many draws. So Miller actually takes the majority of the draws when he plays with him, mm-hmm. and he's really good at it. So yeah. That is huge because, you know, you win the faceoff and your team has the puck, obviously. That's a huge advantage,
and
you know, especially
when,
in the offensive zone.
Lion plays, like, I imagine they played a lot with, like, Quinn Hughes. You get him the puck, and suddenly the puck, wherever you start, you're ending up in the offensive zone, the way that those guys play. So that's, like, an immediate chance right there. And it kind of showed, like, in some of the advanced numbers for him, where he himself had a 61% even strength goals for percentage, where the ratio was, like, 58 to 37. His possession numbers were quite impressive, hovering around 55% in Corsi percentage, which that's on the high end of the league. I think he's like top 30 for skaters and in that goals for percentage.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think I'll flip it over to you here, and I think if I had to guess, I think my guess would be right on the mark for yours.
Yeah, right on the Jacob. So I chose Jacob Markstrom. I've been, you know, pumping his tires up all year. I watched a lot of Canucks games. I dare say I even had a touch of fandom for the Canucks this year, which is weird for me to say. But I absolutely love Jacob Markstrom. He was without a doubt the MVP for that team in my mind all season. Just the amount of, I don't have so specific stats on high danger chances the Canucks gave up, but it feels like a lot. And Jacob Markstrom always seemed to have an answer. You know, one of the funniest plays all year was the 3-on-0 that the Canucks gave up to the St. Louis Blues in overtime.
That was an amazing one.
Where Tyler Myers took out JT Miller and he took out JT Miller and Bo Horvat in the corner down by Binnington, and the Blues came down on 3-0. Markstrom had no chance, but he made it look like he almost had it. Like, he was so close. He played it so well, and his team wasn't there to help him out, and he almost had it, and that's what I feel like he was doing all year for them. It's just bailing him out of shitty situations. He seemed like he would save more of them than not, and he just came up with monster saves when,
Yeah.
a shaky decor gave up a lot of chances against him, and he'd answer. So he ended
Yeah.
up having a 918 save percentage, a 2.75 goals against average, two shutouts. So
I mean, that's not like an
not
impressive
like
stat line, but context, bringing context into it makes it a lot more impressive.
Yes. It's the context that matters. I mean, you have a decor of Chris Tanev, Tyler Myers, Quinn Hughes, Troy Stetcher, Jordy Benn, Oscar Fantenberg, and Alex Edler. So outside of Tanev and Edler, there's some shaky defense there.
Not to
Even
mention, I mean,
Quinn
the
Hughes.
forwards, the dominant forwards, a lot of them are younger and still kind of
Yeah.
offensive minded, right? So defense can only cover so much of that, and then
It just, he had the highest point share on the team. I absolutely love this guy. And his father passed away this year. He missed some time. I feel like he was just like the rock for this team. He was always there, and we saw it when he wasn't there. When they had to rely upon Thatcher Demko to fill in, wasn't the same. They lost.
no.
They lost quite a few games when Markstrom wasn't around. And at the end of the season, Markstrom, kind of a weird mystery injury, and I really hope for the Canucks that he's back and fully healthy for playoffs, because without him, I feel like they have absolutely no chance.
Yeah. So I've got some high danger chance numbers here, and he sits 10th in the league in high danger shots against at 286. Now, he also played about 10 less games than almost everyone else above him on the list. So if he had played him, the same amount of time on ice or games played or whatever, he'd be right up there with a league lead. I say lead, but that's not exactly a
Yeah.
stat you want to lead in.
No, unless you save a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, the Canucks gave up a lot of chances. They hung him out to dry a lot, and he bailed them out. Like, he made the games exciting for me. Just
That's it. Yeah,
because
'cause he didn't just make a normal save. Like, he'd make big saves, like highlight reel saves.
timely.
Wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, like timely highlight reel saves. And he's not afraid to stack the pads. He does the old school windmill saves sometimes, and it's awesome to watch. So I
It's so
absolutely love
fun.
that guy.
Screw the fundamentals.
And like I said, his father passed away. I know it must have been a really tough season for him, but I think he's without a doubt their MVP, and I think he really cemented his case as someone that they have to re-sign. I don't think that Thatcher Demko proved he was ready to be the guy for them. So
Yet.
he's gonna have to, he's really earned a huge pay, and I think he's gonna get it. But we'll move on to the last team here to go through, the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm never gonna forget watching the intro to their playoff series that first year, and you've got that person announcing the opening ceremony, just going like, "Golden Knights." It was
So
just so
weird.
out of place and so hilarious in context.
So
But
Vegas.
yeah, with the Golden Knights, I had to go with their kind of new shiny toy in Mark Stone. He comes in
Ooh.
last season and impresses the hell out of everybody playing with Pacioretty and Paul Stastny, and they continued that through a lot of the season. They didn't play together the whole time, but that's they pretty much have two of the best lines in hockey, and those three players have been one of them. Mark Stone is a key part of that line. He is easily one of, if not the best, two-way winger in the league. He ends up with 63 points a season in 65 games, 19.25 in time on ice per game. I believe he was the forward leader for them as well in that. His impact on the team's play when he's on the ice is more than impressive, where he's got 61.9% in shots for percentage when he's on the ice, like fifth highest in the league. That does rival Pacioretty, actually. That I think the only player who's consistently ahead of him was Max Pacioretty. But his possession numbers, as usual in his career, are absolutely insane, where he's got 58 Corsi 4 percentage, 59 Fenwick 4 percentage. And I honestly think he's the type of player who's going to end up being like a future captain down there.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, I think
we may have said that when he got traded, that he would be a future captain, and he's really, I mean, he's just proven it.
Big time. So I think I know who you would have settled on, but let's just confirm this for me.
I have another former Eastern Canada player, Max Pacioretty.
There we go.
So for the reasons you said, yeah, I mean, 32 goals, 34 assists, 66 points.
That's a really good year for him.
Very good
year. A major bounce back. He had a down year. He had a bit of an unimpressive season with Vegas' first year there. But this was a really good bounce back year for him.
Yeah, he's done really well. You know, he led the team in points, led the team in goals. Just a great year. I mean, you kind of touched on everything that I was going to mention anyway about Mark Stone. Max Pacioretty was basically the same, probably way less takeaways, but just a good player. Yeah, really, I mean, like the two lines, you mentioned one of the two best lines in hockey. That 1-2 punch is pretty unreal. Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, and William Karlsson, and then Stone, Stastny, Pacioretty. It's just nasty.
That's basically a really team pick. Who can defend against those, like those Edmontons and Pittsburghs with the two line punt offensive punch.
Yeah.
Like one of the only teams really who can actually defend that whole thing.
Absolutely. You can really pick like any of those guys and make a case about why they're MVP.
That's the thing too. Vegas is another one of those teams where it's like success by committee. Where it's like individual players are able to stand out, but it's really a result of the whole team being as good as they are and the whole team buying into the system.
Yeah, which is really weird because their coach got fired.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that changes because I think like Gallant was a huge reason why they were able to get that in there so quickly, and we'll see if DeBoer can maintain that or if he kind of changes things up for next year or even coming into the play-in rounds and playoffs here.
It's still weird to me that they picked up DeBoer.
Yeah, like, right. Of all coaches, the one who's like you've developed a rivalry with.
It's so bizarre, I am still shook that they fired Gallant. I mean, we talked about it when it happened, but it's still weird to me. They weren't doing that bad. They were doing good.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they somehow still did quite a bit better under DeBoer. But they also, I mean, that could have just been like the 10-15 game hot streak most like some teams can get after a coaching change. It's not really sustainable long term. The true test is going to be like the first bit of probably the 2020-2021 season. To see how they respond to that.
Yeah, if he's going to want to change systems or, you know, what's he going to do? Because there's a lot of talent on those two top lines to score. And then if he changes the systems, is that still going to be the same? Are they going to use their talent as much? Are they going to rely on playing a system?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of an off year for Marc-Andre Fleury. He had only a 905 save percentage, minus 6.5 goals saved above average. I'm really not sure why a lot of league pundits love Marc-Andre Fleury so much and rank him so highly. You saw in that NHL top 15 goalies in the playoff
pool. Oh yeah, he somehow found his way in there.
It's like, this guy sucked this year. You don't even have like Edmonton's goalies on the list, and you have Fleury, who plays shitty all year, and he gets on there.
Yeah, I think there's it's a lot of reputation stuff where it's like no one can really actually watch every team play every game, so you end up with like, oh, this guy, I remember his name, like, oh, he's good. So you kind of go in there with the rose-colored glasses on how certain people play. Not that like we're immune from it, but it's like that seems to be what happens with some of the players as they age.
Yeah. So bouncing off of the Golden Knights next season, I'm interested to see what they do with their goalie situation. Robin Leonard was acquired from the Chicago Blackhawks. He's on a 1 year, I think it's like $5 million or something deal. I think, I'm not sure how many years Marc-Andre Fleury has left, but do they look to the future and try and move Fleury and keep Leonard? That could have a real different impact on how the team performs next season.
I feel like with the importance of Fleury to the identity of the Golden Knights, that they try to keep him even as just a backup until he retired. Because he was kind of like their first big name, right? He kind of has a lot of importance and a lot of attachment to the team, to the community, to their identity. So from a marketing perspective, maybe they'd like to keep him until he retired.
I would have thought the same thing about Gallant.
Yeah, good point.
At least keep him for a few more years.
Yeah, but, I was like, oh crap, we're third in the division, better fire the coach.
Coaches are always the first to go, so
yeah,
just seemed a little trigger happy on that one.
Yeah,
so maybe they'll do the same with their goalie, who knows.
Oh, maybe. While we're on the Golden Knights here, I want to give a special shout out to one Shea Theodore for kind of his absolute emergence and dominance on the Golden Knights defensive line this year. He didn't necessarily come out of nowhere, but he really took a major step forward, ends up with 46 points in 71 games, playing 22 minutes a night. He ended up probably filling or probably giving them like a legitimate top defenseman, like top two defenseman for the first time in their short history.
Well, any other players on any of these teams that you want to give a shout out to, Sean?
No, I think that covers all them for this week for me. How about you?
That's pretty much it.
Okay, so I think that wraps things up for this week on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on your preferred listening platform. To keep up to date with the latest content, you can follow us on Instagram at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast, and you can also let us know who you have for Pacific Division MVPs down in the comments. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next time with more hockey talk and probably more NHL restart previews.